Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with this subject of unreality. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And thank you all so much for joining. We'll start with our morning prayer.
Yeah, this is from page 61 of Divinity Course in General Collectania by Mary Beth Eddy. This prayer. Oh, keep me ever seeing thee and seeing as thou seest, my life, my joy, my all. Oh, that an influx of divine light and glory may enter each and every one of our hearts, and that you may be endued anew with power from on high. God, forgive me for having any doubt, fear, or lack of faith that all things are not possible with thee. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. All right, Karen, the watching point.
Watch number 273. Watch that you understand what Mrs. Eddy meant when she said, Miscellaneous Writings, page 210, quote, error when found out is two-thirds destroyed, and the remaining third kills itself, end quote. Once Mrs. Eddy said, quote, could you, my dear ones, but see the grandeur of your outlook, the sublimity of your hope, and the infinite capacity of your being, you would do what? Let error kill itself. It comes to you for life, and you give it the only life it has, in belief. End quote. The deduction is that error is uncovered or found out only when you see that you have been given it. You have given it all the life it has, in belief. When you see this, at once you withdraw such support, and thus the error is two-thirds destroyed. Then the remaining third, which is the manifestation, having no support, kills itself.
Thank you. Hey, comments on the watching point?
Well, I've been learning that, you know, when I ask myself, how am I keeping things alive? How am I giving it life? And I've learned that, or I'm learning better, that any time I think I need to change something, heal something, or change a situation, whatever it is, I've separated myself from God. I'm not seeing his allness. And then I'm the one giving it life. And rather than seeing it only as if God is all, then this is nothing but animal magnetism. But if I'm thinking I have to change something, then I am giving it all the life it has. So it's been a wonderful learning that. And then once I stop doing that, then the manifestation, it goes.
Thank you. That's a good, clear explanation how it works, tricks us.
Yes.
To put it simply, I took the bait. And I realized.
Took the bait.
Yeah, I was grateful for the clarification that final third is the manifestation.
Yeah.
That was good clarification.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, I think two things. First one, I think for so long, I felt God so separate that I wasn't thinking that, you know, God manifests himself as we are. And so this power from on high is ours to use at all times, which is what Jesus did. You know, Jesus didn't just have the power, but also saw what God sees. You know, he saw the perfect man and so on. The second thing is this world belief that there's something, say, called a headache, there's something, a tumor, there's something let's say, a season called the season of the so people have allergies and so on and so forth. These are all beliefs that I have believed in also. And so they're there to be had. What if the thought was, what Mrs. Eddy says, thought imbued with truth, knows none of those things. So, you know, if we give it all the power it has. If it comes and we say, well, God never created this. I see it in the book, the little book with the children. This is how they thought. Well, did God send you a headache? Did God make a headache? No. So how can you have it? And simply like that, they were able to heal. So I think it really puts it on us that it's these beliefs, these things that we've grown up with, that keeps it all going.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, yeah.
And I find that the realization of that we believed in the belief and that we are giving it life, or I, that can be a very shameful experience. We cannot say somebody else did something to me or something did something to me. It is in myself. And maybe that's why it's so hard to realize it or to admit it. But when we do, I find now, just when I heard Karen reading the watch, it's amazing that then most of it is destroyed and we can have dominion.
Yeah, and many shame is because you've also got pride, so better get rid of both.
Yeah.
So,
and then that's why I think it seems that, well, at least for me, it seemed like, gosh, being a Christian scientist, this is hard work. Well, it's hard if you're trying to change perfection. If you're trying to change something, it is hard work. But if somebody were to say, I was trying to think before that it was time to call, it's, okay, how can I, what is it, an allergy? Can I? So if somebody, well, we've got a lot of trees around here, and it was really blowing yesterday. So if somebody think, you know, if I were to go out thinking, well, if I don't hold this tree up, it's going to fall over. It's so windy. So I go out there and I start holding up the tree, and I'm thinking, I'm just struggling. And then if somebody were to come out and say, why don't you just let go? The tree's going to stand there fine. It's, in fact, the wind helps it to go. But you are not responsible for holding it up. Just let go. So that word, let go. Oh, you mean I really can let go and let God? So.
Yeah, we get.
Well, but you're right. It is work, though. Take out the word hard, but leave the word work. Because you're being, you know, you're being subjected to all kinds of beliefs all around you, and you do have to deny them. I mean, it is work.
Yeah.
It's a discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, and this is another trick of the devil, ultimately it's much harder if you do not do it. If you do not do it and you let yourself get schloomed with all this stuff, there'll be something waiting for you down the road that's going to be, yes, really hard work in belief. So better clear your slate every day and know it's not hard work. I mean, who said it was hard work? God never said, I'm giving you all this hard work. Work, yes, but not hard.
Steady work.
Mm-hmm. Steady, yep, consistent, mm-hmm. Faithful.
You know, error found out is 2/3 destroyed. There's a common belief that says that, well, if I expose this thing, someone else is going to get hurt by it. And therefore, they don't expose what needs to be brought out into the open. You got to remember, however, error thrives in secrecy. And that's how it continues if it's not exposed. So ultimately, the truth will be exposed and found out at some point in time. So much better to let it happen. So, you know, no one's going to get hurt. People are going to be benefited by the truth of the situation being exposed. Ultimately, it will be helpful and good for everyone concerned. So it's important to choose whom you're going to serve, truth or error.
Yes.
Yes, and going back to the work word, a beautiful hymn comes to mind. Then his unveiled sweet mercies show life's burdens light. I kiss the cross and wake to know a world more bright. I just love that hymn. It's just so beautiful and comforting.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, in Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy says man was not made to till the soil. And all of us eventually should get where we're getting out of even the hard manual labor work, and go to higher things that we have to do, the metaphysical work. But that comes as we grow and change, and only God can transform that in our lives. There's a lot of manual labor I used to do that I don't have to anymore.
I think in one of Mrs. Eddy's writings, and I'm not sure where I heard this, but she said, God works when we work. And, yeah. You know, the work, I can understand the hard work being thought because we are making a reality out of something God didn't make. And we're like Jesus, you know, said to Paul, you're kicking against the pricks. You know, just let go, like Karen said, and let God. That's the best thing to do. Just know his allness and feel his allness. That's a wonderful help to me.
Yeah.
I was just reading in Clear, Correct Teaching. You know, we're talking about this idea of work. Well, she says in miscellaneous writings, this is a quote that he has, Christian Scientists cannot watch too sedulously, yes, or bar their doors too closely or pray to God too fervently for deliverance from the claims of evil. So if you look up that word, sedulously, I mean, it's constant. You can never stop. So instead of thinking of it as hard work, just think of it as you got to keep constantly, you know, watching your thought, because otherwise you have accepted something.
And that's the work, right?
Yeah, that's the work.
Yeah.
And the more you do, the easier it becomes, and the more you're alert to the suggestions. And that's why we pray in the morning, lead us not into temptation, the Lord's Prayer. So we're not tempted to believe things that are true, that are not true.
We are awakening from a dream, from errors that we've been taught. I mean, I don't know about myself. It's just things that we were taught that we believed in, and therefore makes errors so real to us. And now we know better, or Mrs. Eddy, she's teaching us like Christ Jesus did, which people did not understand. I think it's Brigham Young, or it's in the Bible, I believe, that says that Jesus did not think it robbery to think that God, he had the mind of Christ. I mean, so should we.
Right. Absolutely. We claim that, claiming it. So, and it's interesting in this subject is unreality. So all the unreality, the Adam dream, are actually things that we've given life that don't really have the life. And we can strip it of that so-called power by knowing the all power of God. I've been studying this week. It's we're talking about the Doris Henty book, and there's that one we had talked about on the Lord's Prayer, but there's also one on the Holy City that is just beautiful, because that's always arrested my attention in Revelation, the Holy City. We talk about staying in the Father's house, and that describes the Father's city, the Holy City. But in that, she addresses the fear, because it's always fear that gets to us. You know, we think we see something that is actually an illusion, and then we fear it, And then pretty soon we seem to have it. And then we've made a mortal law about it. Mrs. Eddy says that, I think, in Collectanea. But I'm paraphrasing. But in this chapter on the Holy City, she writes, Doris Henty, "Think of the wonder of such oneness, allness, wholeness, which excludes all error to the point of nothingness, and thus assures your serene and permanent immunity from every suggestion or suffering, doubt and fear. Fear is the belief in the existence of something contrary to good, the belief that something can happen contrary to divine love. But love's all presence, all power, all action, frees from any such suggestion, proving fear to be nothing more than a mindless misconception, totally incapable of influencing the Son of God, incapable of invading the one and only consciousness, your consciousness. Fear is incapable of trespassing upon the health and harmony and peace which are your natural state." And then I thought this, because I've heard people say this to me, I'm sure this is where they got it, about flying. Suppose that you are making a journey by air. You know that as divine idea, you can never be in a plane. The truth about a plane is some spiritual fact, an idea of mind always included within consciousness. Science and health tells us that the ideas of mind are obedient to the mind that makes them, and that all that God imparts moves in accord with him. So then, the spiritual fact relating to the plane is that the plane is an idea within mind, is controlled by mind, is obedient to mind, and is moving in accord with mind. When the idea is held in such flawless security, any false move, any impediment or impairment is impossible. Incidental to this mind-controlled idea would be a safe and harmonious flight, free from fear. Man is never in any material circumstance. He is never in a ship. He is never in a home. Every idea, wisdom, beauty, joy, all that constitute heaven is included within your glorious being. I remember, you know, we had a testimony a few weeks ago about that, someone who realized, you know, that she couldn't be outside of God's presence and power. The kingdom of heaven is within you. It's a powerful thought, and it will eliminate this belief of fear. And in doing that, we eliminate a lot of the unreality that we seem to see around us. So God had not given us the spirit of fear, but of what?
Power, love,
sound mind. Sound mind.
Mm-hmm. And the sound mind is also known as a disciplined mind, which you need, as we just talked about, to know the false from the truth.
Watch your thought.
And then this from Max Dunaway in Daily Angels. "I shall not fear. How can I fall when God is here and he is all, and there is naught beside? How can I yield to sin's demand when God is at my very hand and I with him abide? Why should I bow my knee to shame when I hear my Redeemer's name and know he knows no wrong? Nor can I say that I am weak. God is my strength. How could I seek for more or be more strong? And then I shall not live in doubt. Almighty God can hold me out of fear and sinful ways. My life shall be no lying dream, but a reality whose theme shall be to sing his praise." And then also, "I am afraid, O binding, stifling word, how much of good you have delayed because men thought they were afraid. And let your lying whisperings be heard. Yet what are you? A presence, truth, or power? Can you overthrow aught that is real? Or one command of God repeal? Can you withstand the light of truth 1 hour? Oh no, you blackened cloud of nothingness. Man need not in your bonds be held. By truth and love you are dispelled. And man may rise from fear to sure success. So, and as we know, in Mrs. Eddy's home, the hour from 9 to 10 was handling fear to establish the omnipresence, omnipotence, omniscience of God in your own being, your own thought, and in her household, in our nation, in our world. It's very important. It's hard to go around your day if your knees are shaking or fearful about something.
And Mary, I'm sorry.
Well, in doing this, you're going to wipe out all that's unreal. It'll wipe it out. Okay, go ahead.
Would you mind if I read this very short paragraph? When you went into Henty, I thought of her chapter, Christ Acknowledgement versus Human Effort. And there's this very short paragraph in the very front that also ties in what we talked about at the Bible study last week. It says, the disciples had toiled all night in vain. They were working on a material basis, the barren, fruitless basis where persons believe themselves beset by adverse material conditions and difficulties which they must endeavor to surmount. We do not need to struggle so hard, but simply to acknowledge, that is, understand, the presence of perfection now. And of course, that's the Christ acknowledgement. So anyway, I just thought that was perfect for what we've been talking about.
Thank you. Yes. Anybody else? All right. Jeremy, the golden text.
Joshua, choose you this day whom ye will serve.
I love that. It's a good way to start your day, right?
Yes.
Who are you going to serve today, Mammon or God? And there's, as Lil likes to say, there's don't mess with Mr. in between, because there's no Mr. in between. You're either serving God or Mammon. You're being tempted by all these erroneous suggestions to believe in their reality when they have no reality except you give it to them. So remember that and ask yourself often, who am I serving and why? Harry sent a couple of wonderful articles on that about whom you shall serve. And one of them is called Choose Ye This Day Whom Ye Will Serve by Ella Shellhammer. And she writes, Joshua admonished the children of Israel to put away the gods which their father served. Now these gods may from generation to generation change their outward and visible form, but the thoughts would enthrone them are the same today as the days of the Hebrew leaders. Dishonesty, self-aggrandizement, hatred, revenge, jealousy, pride. These are the self-appointed creators of false gods. We are hourly choosing whom we will serve, and are given the opportunity to choose between the false gods of matter and the one living God of spirit. So, very important question to ask yourself through, not just in the morning, but throughout the day. And then the beautiful first commandment, Mrs. Eddy's favorite. Why is that one so important?
Because if you obey the first, it includes the rest.
Thank you. And that's the idea of obeying his allness, his oneness. and not letting anything come into your thinking that there's another God, some devil, because you are. You're thinking there's a devil that has power over you. So if you stay in that first commandment, you are really safe. And that's why God demands it of you and says he's a jealous God, which means, you know, if you don't do it, he's going to be upset. He demands our total obedience, right, Mrs. Eddy says, our loyalty, affection, obedience. And that is what keeps us truly safe and in the realm of the real.
I was going to say, I can't believe how long I went on not realizing that fear and worry were other gods.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah, I was shocked. I had no idea. I thought I obeyed all the Ten Commandments, but my negativity, my fear, my worry, those were false gods. That is actually when I began to make some progress. Every time I worried, I was disobeying the first commandment. It was shocking to me, but I was. That'll keep you in the straight and narrow.
Yeah, you're really saying that God is not all if we are worrying. Concerned.
You are.
You put it very nicely. I'm concerned about such a, well, worry.
Another example of error coming to you for life, and you give it life.
Mm-hmm. So instead of the worry, you can pray about it. Know the truth. Get out your journal, your arsenal, the things you've written. To help you with just statements of truth that will keep you.
And it's the statements of truth that are the antidote. If you're worried about something, find out the truth about it. And when you do, you stop worrying about it. It's a pretty simple process.
Absolutely.
It's a very powerful.
Yeah, and it is awesome that once you realize it, every time you do, you know, have a suggestion of worry, it just sticks out to you like a big sore thumb or a red flag or whatever you want to call it. It's really good. Whereas before, they just kind of went unnoticed.
Yeah. Absolutely. You're just in a state of this perpetual anxiety. I mean, I was, because I just thought fearfully about everything. You give me any given topic and I could worry about it. So it took me, and so it's not always easy to unwind those snarls and be more aware of where your thinking is going.
Mrs. Eddy says call error animal magnetism, and I'm doing a better job of that because animal magnetism is only the negation of God's allness, which points me back to, whoops, that's where I need to go back to remembering that, but that's all animal magnetism is. So when I call it animal magnetism, I realize it's the negation of God's allness. So go back there. Start from there now.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people, as we all know, who think it's normal to worry from time to time, think it's normal to be fearful from time to time. And, we learn in science that those are signs that you need to shore up and that you need to be alerted and handle it. And there's an article, I don't know who wrote it, one of the good early workers, says, don't be afraid of your fear. In other words, don't let fear freeze you into, non-action or wrong action. But when you feel fearful, recognize, aha, there's something trying to get to me. Stand up to it, handle it, and be a terror to the error, as Mrs. Eddy says.
And you will see it flee. She says, error is a coward before the truth. But if we don't ever challenge it, we just go along with it, then we're at fault, especially that we know better.
Yeah. Now, just think of David and Goliath. That's all.
Yeah, he ran.
Beat David.
Yeah, and I think that was Bicknell Young who said that, because that meant a lot to me. He said, go ahead, fear all you want. Fear, yeah. Do anything. Sit there and be as afraid as you want. Because, you know, the idea, oh, you're afraid of being afraid. So there's no end to it. So just, you have to stop it somewhere. And I love this. This is in the blue book on page 139. Yes, he who clothes the lilies will tend you and gird you with strength in truth and love, and so establish the labor of your hands in his vineyard. He's going to help you with this work that you have to do. Never distrust, never doubt the all love, for it never faileth. As your day, so shall your strength be. Be patient, and let faith grow stronger and stronger each day of this pilgrimage. And that's what we should be doing each day, getting our faith to grow stronger, get on the side of God, and it will.
And why is it that we can count on God helping us? What is the basis for that?
His love.
His creation.
He loves us.
Well, and it's even more than that. We are his manifestation. You are God's, you are the manifestation of God. He can't help but love you.
And if that's true, how can you fear? If you're his image and likeness, where's the fear? But, you know, we get into this thing where, you know, things happen to us. We think bad things have happened to us. And, oh, why? Well, man, they're going to happen again. And we get in this state, but then that's where you have to unwind your snarls and realize you were in a dream state. You were in the Adam dream. You were in unreality. You weren't in the real. And start there and dig your heels in and pull yourself out of that. Because I do know so many people who come to me and they've had all these horrible things happen to them and they're scared to death it's going to keep happening. You got to start somewhere. You got to start now, today. So get going. That's why waiting isn't going to help. Thinking you can do it down the road. Now's the day.
Yeah, that's why church is so important to me.
Thank you.
Because you seeing it happening to other people, I can take an example. You and Gary years ago, I saw you guys were doing great. I saw it demonstrating and in work. And I said, if they could do it, improve it, God's fair and partial. I see them happening. It's going to happen for me too, and for others as they apply themselves to it. And it rings to grant. It lived out. So it's seeing the other church members making progress, like Wednesday services, and even just, you know, friendship. It kind of boosts me up to be able to take the next step or continue.
Well, thank you. That's reason for the testimonies, and believe me, and I always would say this, if I can do it, anybody can do it, because I was the worst case scenario. Told that to Gary. It's amazing I've made it this far. So there's hope for everybody. And that's another, the virtue medicine this week, you know, I've told you about this. It's in a newspaper where every once in a while they have what's called virtue medicine, where when you have various positive qualities, shall I say, if you live them, it helps heal your whole body. And some of them so far has been gratitude, courage, forgiveness, awe, to be in awe, excited about what God has done, honesty, joy and laughter, generosity and charity, love. And this week was hope. Now, the definition of hope, a desire of some good accompanied with at least a slight expectation of obtaining the good desired. Hope, yeah, therefore, always gives pleasure or joy, which of course would make you feel better. Confidence is also confidence in future good, expectation of good founded on God's gracious promises. Now, you've heard, you know, and maybe you felt it at times, you just feel hopeless, or someone, you see someone who feels hopeless. That's not a good state to be in. So again, the way, how do you get out of that? And just as I've said, if you've had a terrible history or something like that, you got to start somewhere. And God is always a place to start. In the scriptures, God's promises are kept. Just take hold of one statement and start working with it. Start proving it for yourself. And you will pull yourself out of that situation. In this article, there was a story about a boy who was in high school, and he felt hopeless. I think he was homeless. And he said, a teacher told him, "Jimmy, you are going to be okay." And that did it for him. Mm-hmm. One thing, she was stating a truth. It is true. You are going to be okay. And he accepted it. And he ran with the ball, and he was okay. He said that one statement gave him hope and got him out of that. Mm-hmm. That's why teachers, aunts, uncles, whoever, friends can be so of such great value.
And sometimes that one affirmation to a thousand denials, yes, can really make a big difference. So.
One person who tells you that you're going to be okay. I mean, I feel better just saying it myself. It's going to be all right.
Yes, Mary, you're going to be okay. Yes.
Well, so
but that's why we have to identify ourselves correctly. We have to know who we are, because the more we know about God, and the more we understand who and what God is, the more we know who we are, because that's what we are. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a powerful recognition of who and what we are.
And a clearer sense of what's real versus what's unreal.
Thank you.
Yes, well, back to that. It's, and again, you're not God, but you are God expressing himself, or you can be if you get your mortal sense of self, your human personality out of the way. God is expressing himself through you if you let him. And the more you let him, the more wonderful things will happen, the more you'll bless others. And so never forget to give that word of encouragement. You're going to be okay. Or even just a happy good morning or something.
Hope. Yeah, Florence gave a testimony once, how somebody's smile helped her, her smile helped someone else.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. My God, everything seemed dark. I mean, it's really very, very important. Just a smile. It changed my life. It changed that day, at least. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yes, and just the very thought of life being eternal, that we have always existed and we will always exist, it just sheds a whole new outlook on what you should be doing right now. I mean, it takes all the trivial things and just pushes them away and just gives you new purpose.
Yes, and that's a lot of what people need, is a purpose. And once you find God and realize who you are and why you're here, you will find that purpose. And that in itself is joy-giving, life-giving, health-giving. Mm-hmm. You're not going to lie around in bed all day when you've got things you need to do.
Right.
Now, this was an interesting article, again, that Carrie sent, called "Thy Will Be Done." And I quote from it. And it goes back to our Ephesians in the responsive reading. God's will, our redemption through Christ, history of healing in the church in the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. It is reported by Irenaeus about the end of the second century. The resurrection from the dead was very far from being esteemed as an uncommon event. And we talked about this at the Bible study. It was not until the church became more worldly that healing activity became less frequent. but it was still present following the works of the Waldenses, Moravians, Huguenots, Covenanters, Friends, Baptists, Methodists, Luther, and Wellesley, who reported healing through spiritual means. So this is why it's important that we keep ourselves spiritually minded. And so these events still do occur. And they do. They still do occur. And then Nancy in Texas wrote me this. This was after the Bible study. The Gethsemane research staff found the following item, quote, "The dead alive. The people of Norwich, Connecticut are more exercised about an occurrence which took place in a city a few nights since. On Sunday night, the resurrectionists dug up the body of a young lady who had been buried that afternoon and succeeded beyond anticipations. She had been buried while in a cataleptic fit, and upon being exposed to the night air and animation was restored. The resurrectionist fled and she walked home. Her parents refused to admit her, believing her to be a ghost. She then went to the house of a young man to whom she was engaged. He took her in, and Monday morning they were married." So this was reported in the Lynn Reporter Wednesday, February 7th. And the point being, if you...
1866.
Yes, 1866. And if you recall that date and that time, what happened?
Mary Baker Eddy had her healing.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. She claimed, you know, she rose from the dead pretty much. They gave her up for dead at the same time that this happened.
They were shocked when she walked into the room.
Yes, they were very shocked.
Yeah.
So it shows in many ways we've only just scraped the surface of things. As far as what can be done. And that's why we have to keep at it with joy. It's wonderful, this work we are given.
Yeah, you don't want to be one of the shocked doubters.
No.
Yes. Even her own parents wouldn't take her in, that she was a ghost. Okay, Chardell, your article.
Okay, from the lesson, John 4:24. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. And this is from Effectual of it's Blanche Percy Hogue, Effectual Prayer. The Bible states, "The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. When man sees unworthiness of all that is mortal, he enters upon a humility, which is the first requirement of effectual prayer. The true Christian feels safest when possessed by humbleness of spirit, to be able to say honestly and spontaneously, 'I was wrong,' or 'I am sorry.' And then to do better means spiritual protection. It puts to flight whole troops of damaging thoughts of self-righteousness, self-opinionated and self-inflating. Actual humility is the desire to know God. He who prays should gladly lay aside his own desires and seek safety in the divine mind and all this mind holds for him. If he desires only comfort in the flesh and has no longing to be more godlike, he should not be praying at all, nor should he be expecting help from God. The only genuine prayer asks for redemption from matter and not for peace in it, for deliverance from the things in ourselves that make us sick, not just relief from sickness. Prayer that is right makes over the mind of him who prays. It is evil giving up its boast. Its logical result is increased selflessness, and thought so purified cannot fail to receive an answer to prayer. Such prayer is righteous prayer, for it defeats everything that would obstruct spiritual progress."
Thank you. Beautiful article. That Blanche Hersey Hogue is a wonderful early worker. And, you know, what are you praying for? It's really good when we should have it if we don't have it on our website.
We do.
What is the name of the article again, please?
Effectual Prayer.
Effectual Prayer by Blanche Herschel. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So, very good. And then, Nancy.
Yes, from Lamentations. It is of the Lord's mercies that we are not consumed, because his compassions fail not. They are new every morning, and great is thy faithfulness. I found a commentary that said, throughout his life, the truth of God that was faithfully taught by Jeremiah the prophet was rejected and ridiculed by all and sundry. This was bad enough, but when he saw the destruction and devastation of Jerusalem, he fell into deep depression and wept and mourned over the ruins of the beautiful city of God. However, in his distress, hope was revived as Jeremiah looked away from himself to the Lord and called to mind the loving mercies, deep compassion, and long suffering of God for all his people. And so he declares this beautiful truth. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is his faithfulness. Only as we look away from ourselves, our problems, and our own limited perspectives, and call to mind the greater reality of his loving mercies, deep compassion, long suffering, do we recognize the steadfast love of the Lord, which never ceases. Only as we turn our eyes away from our own disappointments and look to his wider purpose and plan, do we discover that his mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is his faithfulness. It's all about hope.
Yeah. And the other thing we talked about at the Bible study, there are a couple of really beautiful, Tom read an article, and there are a couple that Carrie had sent about that as well, that, you know, a new day has such wondrous possibilities. It holds such untried opportunities for knowing and being and doing all that is good. It unfolds so many unstained hours in which to correct yesterday's mistake and to profit by yesterday's lesson. As the new morning follows each night, so renewed consecration and endeavor may follow every season of sorrow, oppression, or failure. And no experience is so severe, but that its night passes and its morning breaks. Whensoever thought turns without reservation to God for deliverance and enlightenment. That's the Eternal Mercy by Blanche Hersey Hogue. So it doesn't matter how bad it's been, you have a new day to start fresh and new, and you can, and God works in you to accomplish his good purpose. So, so encouraging. So thank you. And I have to say, in reading that, Nancy, you know, that vision of Jerusalem, those of you who saw season 5 of The Chosen Part 1, you know, that picture of Jerusalem being burned, and what Jeremiah had to face. This was before the Christ, but in rebuilding it again, and then that the last scene of the whipping the money changers out of the temple, that was so incredibly moving for me, because talk about if the offense be to God. And it was, and he was not having it. We all felt so strongly. You could just see he loved his father so much. He was not having it. And that whip was in his hand, and anyone that got in his way was going to get it. And it seemed so contrary. I mean, we have seen Jesus rebuking the Pharisees severely. His rebukes, Mrs. Eddy says, were
kind of beautiful.
Yeah. But in this picture, it was so beautifully portrayed. And to have that in us, I couldn't help but think, when I told people this, you know, we used to have these blue Sundays, they were called. No shopping on Sunday. That it was verboten. You just didn't do it. When Gary and I first moved out to California, they had shopping and everything on Sundays. It was shocking to my system at first. I couldn't get used to it. And then when we came back home to the East Coast, eventually they got rid of the blue laws too. And then pretty soon all the children are playing sports on Sundays and everything like that. And we got to get back to where we have this immense passion and love for God. And as Jesus said in the movie, this place used to be where everyone was praying and praising God. And now you all sound like a bunch of animals. And they did, because they were just trying money, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So something really to let move you. And then just briefly in the story about, well, I guess I won't get into it. Okay, Gary will end now.
Here. Okay, this is from the August 1900 Sentinel, an article entitled Godliness with Contentment. And it's by the editor, who was Judge Septimus Hanna at the time. And he writes, Paul declared that godliness with contentment is great gain. With him, this was not a statement of theory, but of fact. He said, I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. He had learned that satisfaction and contentment are not to be found in material things, conditions, or surroundings. Neither could they deprive him of the sense of peace and harmony he had found in the realization of God's presence and power. Satisfaction, from a mortal and material point of view, is a veritable will-o'-the-wisp. It may be in sight, but never found when the place is reached where it was supposed to be. It is always just a little farther on. There is a good and sufficient reason for this. Material things cannot satisfy, and the material senses cannot be satisfied. It is universally admitted that material things are mortal and doomed to death and decay. If they seem to satisfy today, they will not do so tomorrow. The very fact that material things do not satisfy is evidence of the existence of something beyond matter. In this something that is above and beyond matter, humanity must find satisfaction if it is to be found at all. Having learned from bitter experience that material things do not satisfy, man is at length compelled to turn to spirit, the source of all good. As he begins to seek happiness through spiritual consciousness, he is surprised to find that the joys of soul are so many and so real. They never disappoint. They never leave a sting. As he grows in wisdom and stature, he finds that spirit is indeed the reality of existence. He knows not less but more of life when he learns that spirit, God, is his life. He has not less, but more intelligence when he learns that divine mind is the only intelligence, and that this infinite intelligence is forever reflected in man. He realizes more real joy and is more fully satisfied when he learns that pleasure is spiritual. Thus, we begin to see how it is that godliness with contentment is great gain. Godliness, or God-likeness, ever conforms to the law of God. He who is content to seek harmony and happiness only in accordance with God's law has certainly become possessed of a treasure of inestimable value. He has reached the place where the allurements and temptations of the world have little power over him. The loss of material things disappoints and discourages the one who is looking to them for happiness, but not so with the one who has learned in whatsoever state he is, therewith to be content, because he is not looking to matter to supply his needs. He has no fear that it can deprive him of the blessings he has found in divine mind." End quote.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.